This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. This week brings a gathering of doctors, psychologists, social workers, and religious leaders, all headed to Dearborn for the 7th annual Muslim Mental Health Conference, the only conference of its kind in the nation, if not in the world. Dr. Farha Abbasi is founder of the conference. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at Michigan State University, and she is a practicing Muslim. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy.
What led you to form this conference in 2008?
Cynthia, so I was a psychiatry resident at the moment, and I realized during my practice that I wasn't seeing as many Muslim patients. While I was aware that the community had same issues with depression, anxiety happening, that gap made me think we need to do more groundwork, and I at the same time got a grant through American Psychiatric Association, SEMSA, and I thought this would be the perfect way to bring faith-based leaders, imams, and professionals together to create some program for the community.
So bridging the faith-based community with science and medicine.
Absolutely. There is academic work being done, but there wasn't any clinical grassroots level work being done in the community.
What is it you found in these years since you've begun the annual Muslim Mental Health Conference and your work with the Muslim community? Why did that disconnect happen? Why does it happen? Why aren't Muslims accessing mental health care?
This is not a unique problem to only Muslim community. There is a generalized stigma around mental health. Even if you come to parity and insurance and you look at the medical services, there is a disparity between physical and mental health. That is the root of all the problem, that we have this shame and the stigma around mental illnesses. So one thing is there is a prevalence in the general society. But when I come back to closely observe the faith-based communities, this is a very common theme. People feel that if you acknowledge mental illness, somehow you are acknowledging a weakness in your faith, that your religion is not enough for you, or you are not praying enough, or there is this shame and guilt of letting down your family, letting down your community, letting down God. So all that plays into it. What was more concerning is, of course, right now, I just honestly feel that Muslim community is in a very vulnerable situation. There is a historical trauma that's already embedded there with African American community. So we know that 1/3 of the slaves that were brought to the country were practicing Muslims. So we have that historical trauma which is based in African American Muslim community. And on top of that, post 9/11, we have this immigrant Muslim population from South Asia, Arab countries, Middle Eastern countries, suffering very blatant Islamophobia currently. So all that has made this already vulnerable situation more complex.
And are there different sets of challenges and mental health issues, Dr. Abbasi, for the first generation immigrants as compared to their second generation American born or raised children or beyond, grandchildren and beyond?
Absolutely. And this is not specific to one community, but the research is showing that rates of depression are always higher in second generation immigrants. And from Muslim community point of view, the causes that we are looking at, most probably the first generation is so entrenched into integrating into the system that they are not expressing the depression. But the second generation, because they have to navigate bicultural identities, they have more struggles. There is this identities crisis that happens. Now, the Muslim or any religious faith-based community, what we have realized is the happy medium is that if you are very aware and accepting of your own religion and adapting it to the host culture.
And that's a tough balancing act.
Definitely. In the 7th Muslim Mental Health Conference, we have a whole panel talking about this particular phenomena. How do you navigate bicultural identity?
I'm talking with Dr. Farha Abbasi, who's founder of the annual Muslim Mental Health Conference. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at Michigan State University. The conference, the 7th annual, will be happening this weekend in Dearborn. And let's talk about those young people and trying to juggle the dual identity and as you know, one of the recurring stories that we have seen from around the world in recent months is that of these young Muslims, American, British, other countries, leaving home, journeying to Syria with intentions to join ISIS. And then you see images of stunned and outraged parents who are just appalled at what their children have done or are trying to do. We're watching the trial right now in Boston of accused marathon bomber Sokar Tsarnaev. And you have noted most discussions about the Tsarnaev brothers focus on their religion and not their mental health.
When I first came here to this country, I realized how traumatic immigration can be, even by choice. Like, you know, we had planned, we moved here with three kids, but I had no idea the enormous challenge it is integrating into a host community. When we try to move a plant from one temperate to another, or if we are trying to move one animal from one climate to the other, we are hoping the environment to adapt to the species. But it's only humans, when they immigrate, that we are expecting the humans to completely adapt to the host environment. I think it has to be a mutual process. And what happens with this youth, they either get very disillusioned by their own culture, religion, or they get very disillusioned by the host culture. So Tsarnaev brothers are a classical case. These kids were not religious. These kids were not even praying. And the oldest had paranoid schizophrenia. He was hearing these commands, these delusional voices. If you have psychosis, the most common delusion, even if you are not a religious person, is religious. So anyone going through a psychotic episode can have this grandiosity, feel either they are God or that God is talking to them. It's not religion-based. These kids that we are seeing these trends, if you go back and look at their history, none of them actually had religious upbringing. But what happened is they were lost. They were in a vacuum, and they were trying to find a way to be accepted in their own community. They felt rejected, actually, from their own community. So they thought if they do this, they will become this hero in their own communities.
So they're especially vulnerable to advances and overtures from jihadi groups like ISIS.
Absolutely. When there is a vacuum, you are vulnerable to all the negative influences in the society. Yeah. It can come in form of substance abuse. It can come in form of extremist belief system. It can come in form of any other perversion, you know. And somebody who has vulnerability to mental illness, they are more prone to get attracted to these things. So if I go back and look at how do you navigate bicultural, if I put it in a situation setting of Muslim community, we realize that Islamic centers become very important part of our everyday life, our identity. So that's where all the efforts are being focused on, is how do we make Islamic centers more accommodating, accepting of the youth. And we are trying very hard not to move away from the image of the certain practicing Muslim to where youth are. It's an amazing transformation that I've seen over the last few years, is we are getting young imams who are very well trained. There's many chaplaincy program with very important emphasis on mental health component. So we are seeing this change come. The community is aware of the problem, and community is very willing to come forward and be part of the host society, be integrated in the host society.
In fact, you've developed something called the Mental Health First Aid Training Program for the imams and community leaders. So you're helping impart tools for them to use as they interact with the members of the community.
Right. So the national program that was designed, First Aid Mental Health, which has been adapted to the needs of imams and Muslim sensitivity and sensibility. But this year's initiative is actually with Human and Health Services, faith-based neighborhoods and partnership. They are doing this interfaith initiative where we are training the congregation to be trauma aware and trauma responsive.
As a physician, as a mental health professional, as a practicing Muslim, do you believe that mental health professionals working with imams and leaders within the community can indeed help make these young people more resistant to extremist propaganda and recruitment?
Well, I get a little wary when, you know, it's not like we develop an app and put it on everybody's phone. It's not going to be that simple.
Sure.
This is a very complex, multi-layered problem, and it needs that multi-layered approach. But I do think this is a starting point. Like we know that right now the studies are showing that Muslim youth are struggling more in comparison to other religious youth. So that's why I think my biggest thing was go within the community, do academic research, look at the problem, like why is that happening? And I realized Islamic centers are going to be the base, very important partners in this. And that's why we created this alliance where we have the imams and professionals coming together. And I tell you, we have seen amazing results. This year we have 25 to 30 leading imams in the area attending the conference. And one thing which is amazing, it's beyond being of certain sect, or it's not a Sunni initiative, it's not a Shiite initiative, it's a very inclusive initiative where everyone is included. And that is what I'm hoping is going to start some kind of concrete movement, that we start focusing and putting some measures in place to incorporate and engage this youth. And another thing which I see amazingly happening in this conference is 70% participants are the youth.
That's big.
That's huge. They are volunteering, they are trying to access help, they are doing advocacy, they are becoming leaders, they want to do social media. So they are embracing this movement, which is, to me, the biggest positive outcome of this whole initiative.
Dr. Farha Abbasi is an assistant professor of psychiatry at Michigan State University and the founder of the annual Muslim Mental Health Conference. It's now in its seventh year, and it's happening this week in Dearborn. Dr. Abbasi, thank you so much for speaking with us.
And thank you so much. I really appreciate it.